Hi, my name is Jason Hall. I'm the president of AMCO, or the American Master Chef's Order. Some history on AMCO. It was formed in 2014 by a group of master chefs, including Bill Franklin, who spearheaded this concept. The idea was to look at the brand, see how we can further develop it and develop the exam going forward to meet ever-changing needs within the industry, to offer a coming together of our guild once you've passed the exam on the other side, and then also to start to develop the training and support needed for candidates as they approach the exam. Our mission is to promote, sustain, and perfect our craft, all while identifying and supporting and inspiring the next generation of candidates as they progress towards becoming an American Master Chef. You can reach us and see more information on our website at AmericanMasterChefsOrder.org. Thank you.
Welcome to the AMCO podcast. Thank you for tuning in. I'm here this week having a great conversation with Master Chef Jason Hall as we dive further into his Master Chef exam pre-plan. What's turned into a six-part series. We've broken it up to be able to digest it in smaller bites, but we've spent the last few weeks with a total of probably 5 or 6 hours on the phone trying to get this thing recorded, and we're very excited to share it with you now. And I'm really excited, and I know Chef Hall's very excited to share this with you. Thanks for tuning in.
When we left off, we had just talked about Master Chef as a master cook and respecting the food.
All right, so the next thing we're going to talk about is hit the floor, running, light jog. So this was a suggestion that Brian Beeland had brought up to a group of us after the 2010 exam. You know, as you're going through the exam each day, you have a lot, obviously, you have to accomplish. And how you move and how you control that movement kind of speaks a lot of different body language, not only to the need for you to get a task accomplished, but also to the evaluators who are in the kitchen and them seeing your sense of urgency, but while still having it completely controlled. So we always talked about, working your program throughout the day, maybe in three different sections, right? So you come in and you have a lot to get done. You have a lot of fabrication to get started. You have a lot of sauce making to get started, getting bones in the oven, developing those flavors, marination, whatever it is, those big projects first. So when you come in, you have a lot to get running, rolling. And so, hitting the floor running, really attacking those big tasks in order to get them all in process and on the stove and marinating or rubbed or whatever that you're going to do with your proteins before moving into maybe a little bit more of a slower paced assembling things like starches and vegetables and all the managing the stove as you're going through your day. And then your speed kind of changes one more time as you ramp up to service. So you kind of have three different sections where you're in attack mode as soon as you come in and, controlled but aggressively managing your food and cooking through those first steps. And then there comes a time where you have to take a little bit more of a delicate approach as you're shaping and forming and working on some of the finer finesse parts of it before you ramp back up again and move into service, which is a whole different ballet through your food production. So hitting the floor running, we always talked about how to kind of control that. How do you move quickly and swiftly, but also look like it's controlled? And so there's nothing wrong with having that light little jog back and forth between a couple of different locations if you're trying to gather things, but you don't want to be sprinting through the kitchen. You know, there's definitely a balance between frantically cooking and controlled strategy of cooking at a high speed. So it's always something that we just like to talk about, that the perception of how you're cooking in the kitchen and the speed that you work at and the multiple management of processes, what your body language is as you cook. It should be that same intensity that you have on a Friday night on the a la carte line, where you're just moving fluidly, you're moving quickly, you have a lot of things going on, but also at the same time, it's controlled. There's not things all over your station. You know, the one thing that I always followed is straight lines create order, which I was told early on in my career. So if I have a straight line of mise en place above my cutting board that I'm working on, my cutting board is the central area where I'm building or shaping or developing this next task before then finishing that up, rolling it all into the low boy, setting up the next thing, straight line in front of my cutting board of my different mixes or processes, spices, etc., to manage the next thing, then that all goes back down into your neatly organized low boy. So really kind of that mastery of your station is what it goes back to, is being able to accomplish everything that you need in that period of time, and being able to control all of those things, but having that still, you know, aggressive and fluid cooking process throughout the day.
Yeah, and obviously staying on top of all of those things, working hard, that pace, you want to make sure that the wheels don't look like they're coming off, definitely. If they do, I mean, it is what it is. There are those times when you're not totally controlled, but I remember Ken telling me, you know, attack the stove. Like, don't be gentle, don't be delicate, attack the stove.
Yep, there's so many processes that have to go onto that stove in the first, you know, hour of cooking. Everything has to happen, and it has to be that aggressive management, which kind of rolls us into the next point, is managing your stove. You know, as you said, there's so much that has to happen. The bones from your fabrication are in the oven, and you need to start reductions, and you need to start water for pasta or gnocchi or, you know, reductions. There's a lot happening. That stove should be completely full for those first couple of hours of all the different processes that you need to have happening. And so within that, you have to manage your stove as well. You have to, while you're doing a task on your board, be still all over that thing. The last thing that you want is to forget that something's sitting there and it reduced down and scorch. You know, it's important to remember to have pastry brushes set up so that you're managing the sides of your pots as the reductions come down, so there isn't any scorching or any transfer of that reduction or scorch into the final sauce. And it's a big job. You know, there's nothing wrong with having your mentioning that all to your apprentice as well. Like, today is going to be a very busy day. I've got these 10 different processes that have to be on the stove in the first, you know, hour and a half of our day. So feel free to look for these things and kind of coach them into exactly what your expectation is, and give them some heads up of potential red flags within your day and within your program throughout that day, so that they can help you keep an eye out on things and be that gentle reminder. Chef, it's been 15 minutes. You told me to remind you to do X. I coached my apprentices on all those things. Now, I didn't tell them everything, because in a way, the less they know, sometimes the more effective they are. But I definitely pointed out those red flag points where I knew I needed an extra set of eyes. So some of that becomes that point of really being honest with yourself and where you're going to need a little extra help, or, you know, that at a certain pinch point through your program, you have a lot going on and you need someone else to keep an eye on it. There's nothing wrong with using your apprentice to do so, as long as they're not the ones who are, you know, managing the pots and et cetera. So, but use that extra set of eyes in order to accomplish that, because it's a very, very busy time throughout the entire program, but especially in the first few hours of cooking.
Well, that's a big component of having a great relationship with your co-me too. You know, you want to, I've found much more success in working with my co-me, being open and honest and really transparent about everything that's going on, and not trying to make trying to ease them, I guess, as opposed to trying to keep them super on edge. You know, I mean, obviously anything's a balance, but definitely if the co-me sees you as approachable, if the co-me feels like they should tell you, hey, chef, should your pot be doing that on the stove? That's going to, I mean, that it saved me definitely, I think, on day six. Hey, chef, your sauce is looking a little, you know, and if my Comey didn't feel that comfort, I'm pretty confident that sauce would have been gone.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of that coaching that you can do on the front side with them. And we'll talk about that probably a little bit on one of the future slides. But even on classical or buffet catering, where you're immersed in some massive projects, there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, you know, when I put this consomme on, I want you to keep an eye on my raft. You know, when you see the raft start to come up, let me know so that I can get over there and manage that. There's definitely those pinch points, those red flag moments through your program where something requires a lot of attention that you can't necessarily break away from your task in order to keep an eye on completely, but that's what they're there for. Yeah, and in instilling those responsibilities within the Comey to feel comfortable to approach you, that has to be one of the first things that's done when you build that relationship. You know, the stronger that is, the more successful you're going to be, because you're completely reliant on this person for their abilities to manage the projects that you're giving them.
Well, and if used properly, it's double your work time. So if you have 4.5 hours to cook,
absolutely,
having a Comey with you gives you 9 hours worth of work.
It absolutely does.
So now talk a little bit more about managing the stove.
So throughout that whole process, you know, you're going to have things that collapse down. You know, you're going to start off with reductions and sauces, et cetera. It's important to have those things collapse down. So if a reduction is going into a sauce, that reduction isn't just sitting there all day. It's transferred into the proper container if it's going to be held there. So you don't have pots and pans all over the place not doing anything. The goal is to have pots and pans all over your stove that are actually cooking through those processes. I found it really beneficial to bring a griddle plate so that I could straddle the back two burners and create a larger surface area for myself. There's nothing that says that you can't do that. You know, typically on a 6-burner range, you know, you have a little bit of a hard time because you're only cooking for, you know, 6 to 8 people through this process. So you don't need massive pots and pans. You may need that in the beginning as you're bringing something down. But as you cook, you're going to collapse down further and further into smaller vessels before you transfer it into something that you're holding, whether it's thermoses, which I personally used a lot as I got my sauces into those last phases of cooking. I didn't hold them in a water bath. I had thermoses that I had preheated with hot water from a tea urn, and then I finished and transferred my sauces into those for service. When I came into service, then I used those thermoses into finishing vessels where I would mix in my, you know, last minute, you know, infused oil or fine herbs or lemon or whatever it was, so that I could keep my stove completely clean for what I needed to do cooking in the window, which is usually, you know, sauteing fish, finishing a roast, basting things at the last moment, where I need to now reoccupy that space with something a little bit larger. So just from a sauce perspective, that's kind of how I look at it. But the griddle plate was a really beneficial thing for me, because as I started to collapse things down, I'm now able to move things off of those larger burners and into smaller pots that I can hold or that need to reduce at a little slower rate towards the back. So there's nothing that says that you can't bring things like that or practice with things like that to get used to it, because it's gonna benefit you. You definitely don't want to have a lot of waste. So using those large pots, you know, really can kind of disorient things if you're trying to cook too much food, because you are judged on waste at the end of the day and how accurate your program is, which maybe isn't always talked about as much. But you're cooking for 6 people, you should be really close to having that right down to the wire, so that you don't have excess food in your coolers, because the kitchen proctors are going to look through that at the end of the day. If you're all finished and there's
I just want to hop in for 1 second there. There was a mind-opening topic, and you just totally inspired me. You know, there was a, if you have a ton of product left over, it's also going to show up in your in the tasting room as well, right? Like if you're making way too much sauce, then that means your sauce isn't as concentrated, and that means that you're not delivering as much on the final plate. And you know, that was a huge wake up moment for me, was having, you know, an extra 16 ounces of sauce left over when, you know, 16 ounces of sauce could have been reduced down and concentrated my final sauce into a much better bite. So, you know, it shows, and that's, I think, one of the beauties of the test, right, is it shows the deficiencies. And any mistake you make early on in the cooking, whether it be in butchery, whether it be in sauce making, it completely shows up in other places in your program.
It absolutely does. There's no hiding things from the end result, you know? And I mean, I remember when I first started doing runs, I would always, you know, if there was someone there, I'm like, well, maybe they didn't see that. Maybe, you know, maybe they didn't notice.
They did.
But in some way, shape, or form, as you alluded to, either it's a result of someone looking through things, you know, not having enough flavor developed because you didn't take the time to do some of those early steps and get caramelization or build flavors from fabrication, because you didn't take the time to fabricate correctly, or, you know, because you didn't spend the appropriate amount of time on X, the result is going to equal Z, you know. So you have to really put in the proper time and energy and be honest with yourself as you cook, you know, be proud of showcasing what you're doing and how you're doing it. You know, once you see someone, you know, turning a fish three or four or five times on a cutting board, you know, you start to wonder, you know, are they comfortable with this fabrication, you know, before they cut into it. So there's no one who's dissecting those things until someone sees something that raises a red flag. And really you just need to be comfortable to, you just really need to be comfortable enough with what you do every day. If you're doing it every day, no one's going to, you know, we might say, well, you know, you could have taken a little bit more off the belly there or something like that. But 99.9% of the time, we're just watching to see how you do it. You know, everybody has a little bit different method than someone else, but if the food is treated correctly, if it's fabricated correctly, if you build your sauce different than me, that's okay. As long as the result is positive and you don't have a lot of waste left over and it tastes really good and you really cooked strong, it doesn't matter if you're doing it different than me. You know, so I think that's something important to remember, because that's one of the things that plays into your mental state, which is pressure that you're actually putting more on yourself than the evaluators are putting on you whatsoever.
Right. It's a verification of your skills, and they're there to make sure that you understand the product. And I remember seeing it, you know, from both sides, from taking the test and from, you know, apprentice proctoring of the test. The evaluators get just as excited or get even more excited when they see somebody doing the right thing. When, you know, they're like, damn, watch this, or they'll go get the other CMCs, or, you know, and they'll have people come around, and it's not to make you any more nervous. It's just excitement of like, look, watch this, like, damn, he gets it, or wow, she really gets this. That's exactly what it is supposed to be. And from the other side, right, you don't know that that's the conversation that's going on. All you see is the clipboard and you hear pss, pss, pss. And you know, and mentally your mind starts playing games with you. And that's why the mind is such a huge component of this. But they're often, or I would say just as often, praising and looking at all the good work, right? You know, I mean, I think everybody wants to see candidates be successful at the test.
Absolutely. You know, same with me after now my third, exam evaluating, you know, the first time out as an apprentice evaluator, I just, you know, kind of sat on the sidelines and watched. But I do that exact thing. I get excited when I see somebody doing something new or different. And I'm one of those. I'm one of the ones who calls the others over. But I've even taken a step further that when I do, I approach the apprentice and I say, hey, we're really excited about that thing that you're making. You know, I don't want there to be that cold standing around with a clipboard thing. Maybe that is going to be a detriment to something that we're excited about now, you know, possibly pushing it the other direction because they don't know why they're there. So I'm definitely one that will gather the others and say, you have to see this. This is really awesome, or watch, look at all the flavor that he just built or she just built on this sauce with, you know, burnt orange peel and the duck jus and, you know, the intensity of what's about to happen here. But that's the other part of that is I'll go over to that candidate and say, hey, we're, you know, just so you know, we're really excited about what you're about to do. And just to kind of break that monotony up a little bit.
Beautiful. So now the next one stood out really strongly to me, a signature item on every plate. And at first I kind of scratched my head on that one. And then after you explained it to me, it totally made perfect sense.
Yeah. So this was a workshop actually that I did with Sean Loving, Amanda Zimlich, Ryan Baxter, and we did it up at Schoolcraft in 2011, I think, before we went back to take the 2012 test. Dan Huglier pretty much led our little weekend, and he said, for practice this weekend, we're not going to do any runs. And we were all like, what? You know, he said, I want to see five signature starch and vegetables from each of you. So there's four of us. That's a lot of food. I want to see five signature starch and vegetables from each of you. And you're going to put them up and you're going to then discuss them with the group. And he's like, and I want recipes. And then we're going to have, you know, basically how can your food help and benefit the person next to you? It was a really interesting workshop. I'd never even thought of having a side dish workshop before, but it really was kind of a marker moving experience for all of us. We were seeing and experiencing someone else's approach to a creative starch and vegetable, and we were tasting it, and we were enjoying it, and we were talking about simple modifications that could take it to the next level. It was very you know, in hindsight, it was very team approached, like being on the U.S. team, as you know, Chef. You know, that's kind of how we always evaluated at the table while on the Olympic team. And so, you know, that's what he had us doing, you know, to prepare for the test as this little group. And pretty much that group of us, we stuck together for a long time, you know, and both prior to the 2012 and after. And so it was really an eye-opening moment of we need to create something memorable about each part of this test. You know, even if it's the salad, that we have something that's creative and unique and something that says this is Jason Hall's food or this is Gerald Ford's food. So that there is whatever the program is, but it takes it a step further. If it's a salad, it has a really unique component to it. If it's a even if it's a classical dish, it has something that's unique to it that says, this is my style. It doesn't always have to be, you know, the food even. It can be the way you serve is something through classical. Or I remember I did ossobuco for Continental on my day eight. And, you know, I had braised them and it was with risotto milanese. And I had my ossobucos all set up, and I found little demi-tasse spoons, and I put gremolata on the demi-tasse spoons, and I stuck them all in the marrows as a garnish to, you know that I intend for you to enjoy that marrow and enjoy this gremolata, which is going to kind of make it and push it to the next level. So even seasoning the marrow and thinking about those little things, that's a signature move. You know, that's something that sets your food apart from the next person, but you have to kind of think those things through on the front side. So while it seems kind of probably common knowledge to do that on a freestyle day or, you know, obviously on the market basket there at the end, it needs to be on every day. There needs to be that extra signature item that you work through. And you know, to go back to where I started off, that workshop really opened my eyes to those things that we did, because it forced us to see how creative we could be if there were no parameters. And that's kind of how he had us approach it. But then we were very easily able to now come back to our, you know, our clubs or restaurants or schools, and we had a whole new resource, because now I had ideas that Amanda did that I liked. I had ideas that Sean did that I liked. They had ideas that I did that they liked. And so we were able to create this really neat little network of starches and vegetables. And, basically we could roll that into just about anything. And so I really think that there's a really highly beneficial approach to having that little team, that little group that you select and find through your path to practice with. You definitely learn a lot more because you're with someone and practicing and discussing with someone who has the same goals and intensity about this path as you. But that's kind of the story of the signature item on every plate. It's going to do that exact same thing that we just talked about. It's going to have one of us saying, wow, look at what so-and-so is doing. You see how they're, building this salad component. It's much, we want to see something new. We want to see what you do every single day. So if you can find ways to have your personality, your personal cooking style influence even the things that are set within a parameter, that's an exciting thing. That shows the beyond comfort level that you have with what the assignment is, and that you're able to take that to the next level. Now, going too far, that can be too, especially on classical, where you're really given a program and you have to stick a lot to it. But there's ways to do that even within those parameters, like I mentioned. So, that's kind of the story there.
Well, and if I can just, I feel like this is a perfect point to put the plug in there, that this is a mastery level exam. The fundamentals of cooking need to be behind everything that's done. So what? You can make a great braise. That's the cost of sitting at the table. I mean, that's a basic fundamental that you need to be able to execute. So now,
exactly,
how do you take a braise that your staff could do and execute it masterfully? How do you put your touch and your signature on it and show that you have mastered this technique and now you're working on what's next for it? Salads are served pretty often in the exam, right? I think I'd say at least half of the segments have a salad requirement, right?
Yeah, I'd say at least half.
Okay. So now the salad during the test is really meant as a palate cleanser, right? Like it's not meant to be a lunch salad it should be composed, but why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So the reason I put that in there, that is the general purpose of a salad, is it's that palate cleanser between courses as you transition from one protein to another, usually, one heavy dish to a lighter dish or vice versa. And so it's to prepare your palate for what's to come. And the issue that I've seen is that on certain days you're overwhelmed with proteins. Freestyle, for instance, you might have 5 or 6 proteins. Market basket, you might have 12 proteins. So sometimes it's really easy for us to say, I'm going to take this confit and I'm going to put it with my salad, because that's what we do in our clubs and restaurants. Our guests are open and usually are looking for protein in some way, shape, or form with our salads. And this is different. And it's just really a gentle reminder of what that salad is actually for, especially here at the exam. And so the expectation with the proteins, when you have an overwhelming amount, is that you figure out how to work those into creatively into those dishes. If it's game, that maybe it's an app that has 2 or 3 proteins creatively worked and managed into that process. If all the seafood is the seafood course, it's important to talk about and remember some of those things where you don't want to have seared scallops and a small piece of fish and then have shrimp on your salad. All of that is intended to be part of your seafood course. And it's up to you to figure out the most creative way to manage that within the same serving. So that's really what that is for. Just a gentle reminder of this is the purpose of a salad. This is our expectation with a salad. This is what we want it to do. It should be, there should be some fat in there and some high acidity and something creative and move us into your next course. But it definitely does give you the opportunity to create that signature item there. So as you look at these baskets and as you start to practice these baskets, where you see those large quantities of proteins, the expectation is that those get worked into a savory course.
Well, and also, as much as the test, no, the test is absolutely not a competition between you and the other chefs, but there's definitely an opportunity there to set yourselves apart and show your individualistic style when all of you are, a small group of you are given those ingredients.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it shouldn't just be greens and an emulsified vinaigrette and some knife cuts. There needs to be some thought and some inspiration put into that that's going to take it to the next level. It's going to make it a very appealing, not only visually, but also from a consumption standpoint, experience for the diner, for the, and you know, the guest or the evaluator in this case. But it's those things, you know, a lot of those things can be done on the front side. There wasn't a lot of, you know, and I kind of give an example at the end of this, I think, but I had an Excel sheet that one tab was every soup I could think of and every soup garnish I could think of. I had a second tab that was every high-end salad that I ever did, every interestingly shaped cheese / mousse component that I did. And that's how I built my program. That's how I studied. I selected what I wanted to cook, and then I made it kind of fit the program. There, if you do this correctly, there's very little surprises within it, because you're going to pull your basket a day out or a day and a half out, but then you're going to kind of push those things into your funnel of resources. And so it's important to start developing those things like yesterday, you know, that you have a go-to, this is Jason Hall's soup file, and I have consommes and cream-based soups and other and broth soups that are interesting, and these are all the garnishes that I'm very, very comfortable with that I've done for chef's tables, wine dinners, guest chef events, etc., and I can do them with my eyes closed, and there should be a, you know, a good variety of those, so that when you get to the exam, you can pull this, you know, list of your own food up and say, I'm going to tomorrow, you know, I got these root vegetables, so I'm going to make this, you know, amazing puree, and I'm going to do this parsnip timbale, and I'm going to do these other things that are going to be, you know, a really cool experience, and I'm going to have then pour the soup table side, so my, you know, center garnish kind of melts into the soup. I don't know, but that's the way that you need to kind of think of it, is not just drive into this exam, but at the same time, create your own file of exactly what you do and what you like to do and what's successful, and then keep building off of that. Keep building off of your own personal food all the way up to the end. But I did that for soups, for sauces, for starches, for vegetables, you name it. Healthy cooking in the beginning, where I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do, but the spice rubs, the reductions, the vinaigrettes that fit within the nutrition parameters, all of that stuff was done for me on the front side. When I got to the test, I just used whatever they gave me and worked it into what I was comfortable with. So, you know, I think that that's an important thing to remember as you approach this, is there's a lot that you can have done long before you get there. There's a lot you better have done long before you get to the exam. You know, pastry alone should be 110% completely done. You should know your breads like the back of your hand. You should know your cake like the back of your hand. You should know your plated dessert. You know, and those things should be running on your menus. We'll probably get into that in a few minutes too.
Okay, and I was going to say, because you should even have your menu written ahead, your food rec done. I mean, that segment can be done.
Absolutely. Healthy cooking, done. You know, that might sound weird because you don't know what you're going to get. My vinaigrette, I had two vinaigrettes. One was caramelized shallot and goat cheese lemon vinaigrette. And I don't even remember what the other one was because I fell so in love with the first one. But I knew the calories of it. I knew that was going to be my vinaigrette no matter what they gave me. It gave me creamy. It gave me acidity. It gave me this really great roasted background flavor. So my vinaigrette for healthy was done 6 months before I came to the test, and I had the backup one if for some reason something flavor wise wouldn't fit, but I knew it would fit pretty much whatever they gave me. I had the interesting component for that done, practiced, knew the caloric values of it, knew I could fit it into the program, and had no concerns. The dessert for healthy, done. I knew exactly how to do it. I knew I even had the molds already built and acetate wrapped inside of them. Everything was done prior to the test. And so, from the frozen yogurt, I did roasted banana frozen yogurt with a spice cake. And that thing had been running on menus for almost a year. And so that's one of the things that you need to start thinking about is if you go and look at the manual, you know what the caloric values of healthy are. So then you only have two more courses to come up with, seafood and whatever the proteins are. And so, you know, if you have, you're going to rely heavily on spice rubs for that day. So you're not going to have as much fat and sodium abilities, but you need to know how to make a really great sauce. And what are you going to do with a combination of fish and shellfish? You can start asking yourself those questions today, and then have the proteins be what they be and work your other components around it. There's a lot of mystery that surrounds this test that really isn't there, that's created and manufactured more so than is the reality once you step into really analyzing and thinking about how to prepare. All of that stuff, buffet catering, side garnishes, all that stuff should be done. You should have a couple that work for poultry. You should have a couple that work for pork or beef based, and a couple that work for seafood. But those six garnishes should be done and airtight so that when you get there, you're just plugging it in. You know you're going to have to do a composed salad for the platter. Again, you have one that works for heavier proteins. You have one that works for lighter proteins. Those things are plug and play. And then you can put all of your energy and effort into the challenges that arise from it.
So next we start talking about equipment. You touched a little bit a few seconds ago about, bringing rings with acetate linings on the inside of them.
Yeah, so again, it comes to some of those questions of, I know I'm going to have to make consomme, so I want my consomme pot. I don't want to have to find a consomme pot. I brought the things that I was comfortable with, my paella pans. I know how they cook. I'm comfortable making paella in them. I know how they transfer heat. I know what to watch for, what not to watch for, as opposed to getting there and not finding the size or the density that you might want. That's going to result differently in your food. I don't think you need to bring the entire kitchen from home, but I definitely think there are things that ease your comfort level at the exam, and exactly those types of things. Consomme pot, which you're used to making your consomme in all the time, that should absolutely be something that is sourced by you. Molds and things, again, from healthy cooking, your dessert should be long knocked out prior to getting there. The only thing you're folding in some way, shape, or form is the fruit that might be in the basket or something based off of seasonality. But, you know, if you know you're going to make a cake, or you know you're going to do, make a terrine or something like that, then have that stuff already done. I had my terrine molds already lined and sprayed before we even left the hotel room and wrapped in plastic. That was one of the things, as we go back to the earlier conversations through this discussion, was something I had Joe do. When he knew it was healthy cooking the night before, he got the molds ready. That's not something that you want to spend time doing or waste your apprentice's time in the kitchen and in your time you're cooking, working on. All that stuff has to be done prior. And so again, you need to bring the things that make that job easy for you and make that job fit what exactly your expectation is. If you're doing it at your club, restaurant, hotel, or school, why rely on where you're going to go to give you the same result and maybe get there and find they don't have the exact same thing. So I didn't bring a lot, but I definitely brought the things that I knew I needed to complete my expectation of my task. As far as buffet catering goes, I knew the shapes that I was going to make. you know, or maybe a couple of curveballs I wasn't sure about. So yeah, I brought my terrain molds. I brought a couple of teardrop molds and things like that, because I wasn't sure exactly what you're going to pull. But as far as the side garnishes go, I, again, going back to my conversation, whether it's going to be heavy protein, you know, lighter protein or seafood, I brought the molds or shapes or presses that I needed to fit those things depending on what I was going to pull. I think all that stuff is really important. And then, you know, as you go into classical, as you start to think about classical and you look at how the score is weighted, there is a large percentage of your score weighted on classical, quote unquote, presentation. So what do we mean by that? Copper, socle folds, artichoke folds, those proper presentation techniques have to be there. And if not, you're really just giving away points. So focus on those things and look up and definitely reach out to some of us if you have questions on any of these items as you get ready. But I had all of my artichoke folds already ironed and pressed, and we brought those from, at the time I was in Florida as well, we brought those with us. They were pressed and in between a stack of or in between two big pieces of plexi. So when we got there, we just packed the artichoke folds for classical. We didn't fold them in the hotel room. We didn't waste time trying to figure it out. Socle folds, same thing. Those were done. The copper was done. I knew what I would put my fish in. I knew what I would put my meat course in. I had side dishes for extra sauce that were copper, you know, so that I kind of had all of that guesswork taken out of it. This was my kit for classical. This was my kit for nutritional. This was my kit for, you know, buffet catering, etc. You know, those things I really put energy into prior to ever even getting in the car, so that when we got there, it just made sense that we pulled this. And yeah, there might be one or two things we didn't need, but we had exactly what we needed in order to make sure that it looked and was presented in the correct manner.
Well, and doing that helps you on such a deep level as well. When the evaluators see your level of preparedness and see that you've thought these things through and look at the work that you've put in and know that you're rolling in as ready as you can, they see your mise en place is tight. There's a very different expectation that's had from the beginning.
Absolutely. You know, when we see someone roll in with their chinaware and their linens folded and a plating setup box that is separate from the cooking setup box, you know, it really goes to show that this person practiced this way, you know, cooks this way in a regular basis at their shop. And that's what it's about. You've got to bring that comfort level and you've got to cook that way at home, you know, and I don't mean necessarily at home, but in your club restaurant or hotel or school, you have to, you're designing your program and you're transporting that with you to make it that much more comfortable, but also practicing the way you're going to execute is key and essential. If you're saying, well, when I do this, I'll actually put it in copper. Well, when I do this, I'll actually use this mold. That has to go out the window early on. You need to practice with the intention of that actually being the end result, so that you can see what it's going to do and so that you're not trying to manipulate something that you haven't done before, when inevitably, you know, there's going to be a couple points through your program that you're going to have, you know, some struggling happening. So practice the way you want to execute at the end. And that way, it's just that much more airtight when you step in and step up to the stove.
Well, and that way you can control the variables that you know about. If you know the ones that you're going to have to deal with, work them out early. There's going to be plenty more that you can't foresee. And freeing up, you know, the details you can allows you the time, the mental capacity, and the ability to dance with the other complications and obstacles that you're going to face throughout your days. I think this is probably the best place for us to stop, and we will pick up again in the next episode.
On behalf of AMCO, I would like to thank everyone for listening today.
This podcast has been recorded in association with South Bend Equipment, Winco Equipment, Colorado Mills Sunflower Oil, and is part of the AMCO American Master Chef Order
Please subscribe or share if any of this information has impacted you in a positive way. I'd like to thank you very much for your participation and joining us in.
You can reach us at podcast@AmericanMasterChefsOrder.org. Thank you.
We have a great bit of content coming up in the next few months here. Look forward to sharing it with you. For any resources discussed during the course of the podcast, please check the AMCO website, AmericanMasterChefOrder.com, to find it there.